Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to another episode of the Dr. Supercoach Podcast. You're on again this week with JB, and I'm joined for the first time in many, many weeks. It's been too long since we've spoken. I've got with me Pistol. How are you?
I'm pumped. I'm psyched. I'm ready to podcast. It's been a while. I'm definitely looking forward to being here on such an important week, JB.
How have you been? How have you been scoring? How's the team going? How's life? I want to hear it all.
I was pretty desperate to halve my rank during the buys. I didn't quite get there. I had a 19.05 last week. So small rise, but unfortunately, I copped the injuries, as did many people. The Proust one really hurt in particular. And yeah, could have been a big week. It could have been a really big week, but up to 12K, which is still my worst ever rank. So hopefully it will just continue climbing towards the end of the season, but we'll see. How about you?
I had a shocking week, absolute horror week. Parrish missing out. I was going down a premium down. I couldn't afford an upgrade. I was going essentially two premiums down at that point. And then I had Rioli and Angwin and Tickle and the list goes on of just poor scores, unfortunately, this week. So
that was fun for us.
Butters as well. Yeah. Mid 1700, I fell down to 7.5K rank, which not too bad. It's not too bad considering where we started, but I'd still like to crack into at least the top 5K. I thought I'd be able to get top 1K by the end of the season, just depending on how my buys went, but they didn't go as well as I planned. So 7.5K, not too bad from this point. Ready to sort of balloon on into the top 5Ks from here on, though. So the Dr. Supercoach Cup is underway. Just a shout out to that. So we got 512 participants in the cup this year. And the first round is this round, obviously coming up. A very, very difficult first round. Yep. I don't think we could accuse anyone of getting a free ride, anyone of not having earned the cup, because if you can get through this round, then essentially you're setting yourself up for a good run already. So it's going to test a lot of people. I might go out first round. I've got a donut this week. So
I'm likely following suit. Well, I am going to follow suit as well. So yeah, right. So donuts for both of us. Good week for the Cancer Council, not a good week for the podcast.
No, and speaking of donuts, Pistol, it's a beautiful fall right now, and our friends at Manscaped want to make sure it's beautiful when your pants fall. Just on that donut trend.
Jeez.
Don't let the trees be the only thing dropping their excess leaves. Give your trunk the look it deserves with the leaders in male grooming and their fourth Generation Performance Package. I can't speak this podcast.
It's going to be
boys, a get your baby makers ready for a cuffing season like no other and join the 4 million men worldwide using Manscaped by going to manscaped.com. And, of course, as always, for 20% off plus free shipping, please use the code DRSC. So thanks again to our sponsors, Manscaped. And as always, we are again sponsored this podcast powered by Code Sport. So thanks again to those guys as well. So a couple of very friendly sponsors that we're very, very happy with. So
some good Code Sports articles that we wrote throughout the buys. Some very good suggestions there that have turned out to be suggestions we'll probably be talking about in this week. So, yeah, if you took note of those, hopefully it was helpful. And JB, I'm going to jump into the Cancer Council. There were quite a few donations. Obviously, it was a bit of a tough round. First up, we have Steve Riverland saying a donut for the McDonald round 13 out, despite all the planning and brilliant advice from JB. Brilliant advice might be, you know, too kind.
Who was that donation from?
I still didn't plan well enough for the buyers. My potato brain is at it again. Yeah, that rhymes. Steve.
Was that?
Riverland.
Riverland? Oh, yeah. Nice, River. Thanks, River.
Thanks, River. This one is from Cheese8. You might recognize that name.
No idea who that is.
I think they came 8th last season. I'm not sure.
This is off topic a little bit. Are they going to change their name next year to like Cheese 12,426 or something?
No, but you're like Cheese 20,000 something.
Oh, sorry.
12?
I went too low. No. Do you think that's going to be a trend going forward, or do you think the Cheese 8's just going to stick around until he dies?
Probably.
Okay, that option. Yeah. All right. Back to you.
We've got a nice message. It says, I'm in a daze caused by Sam Hayes. Nobody told me not to rely on Rioli. It can't be Christmas. There was no carols. But you know what? It's like, so what? Because I can't remember the last time I had a donut. Which was a pretty poetic rhyme/rap.
I don't get it.
He took donuts from those players in round 13. Right, Jason has donated, saying pair of donuts for round 13. B-Rad, double donuts in round 13. Thanks, guys, for your donations. The Dirty Schneiches says, not going to let Richmond stand in our way to kick cancer in the nuts. Please don't tell Mrs. Schneiches this has happened again, which is pretty funny. Anonymous has donated, saying McVay won't play Proust and Port. Don't need a ruck, a tasty buy around donut. My ranking now is sunk. Thank you again for your poem and donation. Kimbo says,
I don't know if that was a poem. That was just frustration, I think.
No, it's ruck and sunk. Yeah, actually, it doesn't.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that one, mate. Might not.
Maybe it was a rap. I mean, I needed an accent. Donating for donuts, holding Tim English at R2 this week. Not donating for the dumb things, as this is a big brain move. Also calling out Brado and Slack for not donating for his donut. Kimbo. It's hilarious.
I love that.
That's so funny.
Love that from Kimbo.
Kentucky Fried says, tipping the wrong race and it coming last by 10 lengths. The actual tip one.
That was in betting today. We have a channel, so it's separated from everything else. Someone gave some advice. That advice came through. Someone else jumped on the wrong advice and sent that through. Everyone else got on that as well, and that lost by a lot. So that was funny the way. I don't like discussing that on the podcast ever, but that was funny the way that progressed.
No, lucky I read that through. When I got to tipping the wrong race, I was really worried where it was going. So I'm glad it ended up PG.
True. It came back full swing. Yep, came back around.
Definitely. All right. I think
is that it?
We're almost at time to actually, you know, do what we set out to do in podcast about Supercoach.
Yeah, let's do it. So it's obviously, as people know, it's a tough round this week, but maybe tougher than any of the buyers, maybe the toughest week that we've faced in a long time. I say that because a lot of people are going to be getting donuts this week, and somewhat even avoidable donuts, but not in a pleasurable way. So we're gonna discuss just trading options off the rip. We're going to go through defense, midfield, ruck, and forwards, and then we're going to finish by talking about the individual players that are missing, whether we think they're trade-outs or not, and as per which situation. And then we're going to just talk about the dynamics of why you'd avoid a donut and what you'd sort of do. So
it's going to be a
lot of discussions to be had. A lot of discussions to be had. So let's just start off with our trade-in options, because a lot of people, whether you're avoiding donuts or you're making your last upgrade this week, a lot of people are making trade-ins still. So I'm going to be one of them. I'm doing my last upgrade next week, which feels horrible. It's the it's like earliest I've been full premium besides one player, and that one player has taken the longest to get to full premium. So it's a strange season, but we're going to start in defense. We're going to start with Tom Stewart, and just discussing the timing of this trade-in and just how good Stewart is, and where you rank him among people that have money, but you know what? They needed a lot more money a couple of weeks ago. He's fallen to 583. His break-even is still 210. If you're making your last upgrade this week, you can afford Stewart. Are you just doing it? Are you waiting? What are your thoughts on Stewart? Because he's potentially dropping to 540 this week.
Yeah, this was a gift. He was on 25 at halftime and ended up on 95, which just goes to show how quickly he can score. I mean, this is really a 120 average player for the rest of the season, wrapped up in a nice little bow. Obviously, if you can wait a week and pick him up for 540k, that would be the ideal situation. I would be looking as well if you don't own him. I guess you've got to weigh up a sideways trade as well, because if you're trading out someone who might average 100 for the rest of the season, as I don't know who people's D6 is, obviously team dependent, but if there is someone that's averaging 100 at your D6 and you can get Stewart, who's you know a 115, 120 player, there's still 9 rounds for the rest of the year. You'll be making up bulk points, like a lot of points.
Let me cut in here for a second.
For sure.
I think we should have this discussion off the rip, just so everything that we say from now on has a little bit more context, because otherwise we'll just be referencing it
a million times.
Like, yeah, and it's essentially, a lot of people are asking about trades and what the breaking point is on, actually, I'm not doing short to Stewart. Instead, I have to hold these trades.
Yeah.
And I think this round was extremely eye-opening, because it's all good to skip through the season as we do and then get to the end of the year and, oh, we got these two trades left. Why did we even save these trades for injuries? We just got 3 injuries this 1 week now, 2 very popular players. Even more than 3 injuries, but it's the 3 main injuries that are affecting teams at the moment. What is the number, if you could put a number on it, of trades that you need remaining? And this is projected post full premium,
yep,
before you're starting to do these sideways trades.
Look, it depends on your risk profile and tolerance. In the perfect world, you want 6. I don't think many people have 6. I think realistically, for me, my tolerance is probably 4. So I'll be sideways trading technically. Someone potentially like Short, who's my worst defender, to Stewart
And going down to 4 or going down to 3?
Going down to 4. And that would be my kind of limit, I think. If you're a higher risk player, you could go down to 3, but geez, less than 3, I would not do it.
I would not do it. I don't think that's even correct. I think if you're a higher risk player,
it's 4.
You're going down to 4.
Yeah, okay.
And so I think right now your plan is to be a higher risk player, and I agree with it. I would also be higher risk at this stage of the season and go down to 4. But I don't think anyone should be going down to 3 trades. I think if you're going down to 3 trades because of a sideways trade, the points that you're making up now can so easily get swallowed. We've got how many weeks left?
9. Yeah. Yep.
9 weeks. Or is it 10 because we're going into 15? No,
it's just 9.
So we got 9 full weeks, 9 matches per week. I don't know about 9 times tables. Is that like
81?
Is that 81 games?
Yep.
Yeah. We got 81 more matches of football to be played this year. If that doesn't scare you on 3 injuries occurring in 81 matches to some of your guys, that could happen in a month. And then what do you do with your final 5 weeks?
Bench cover.
And what's our bench cover looking like this year? Like unless you're very unique, unless you're very unique with how you've structured your trades and your luxuries and etc., you probably don't have good bench cover. Where is my defender bench cover?
Bench cover going around is quite good, I will say. Some I've seen is ridiculous. Sure.
Maybe if you've got unbelievable bench cover, you can afford to be a little bit more high risk. But essentially, the message is the same, right? You don't want to be going down to three trades. I think you want at least four.
Yeah.
And then you can assess again in 2 to 3 weeks if you've had no injuries in that time.
No, fair enough. Definitely fair enough. It's more of a... I think you work out exactly how many points you're expecting a trade to be worth, and then seeing if, you know, for example, Stewart, as I said, upgrade is going to net you more than 150 points on the run home, but trading out, you know, let's say a forward donut this week, if it's Proust to somebody worse than Proust, you know, you're only going to be getting 80 or 90 points or whatever it is, and then it might not be worth, you know, the trade might be better spent elsewhere. So yeah, definitely a conversation to have a bit later in the podcast.
Yep. Okay, so I'm glad we assessed that. So back to Stuart, you did mention sideways into the sub one, so now I can actually say, reference the chat we just had to tell if you're one of those people that could potentially be sidewaysing. But besides that, unbelievable upgrade target, the number one defensive upgrade target in the entire game for the next 3 weeks. It's that simple.
It is that simple. All right, who else you got for us?
We got to get a little bit more creative now, because not everyone has even the 580, 540K. We're going to have to look down a little bit and just see who the hotter players are for a cheaper price. For example, you could save 60K this week on, instead of getting Stewart, you don't have the money, someone like Adam Saad for 525K. His three-round average is 113, five-round average is 106. He hasn't sub-ton since round 9, in which he had 81. Since then, he's been very good. So he's the type of player, I suppose, people will start to look at instead of the Stewarts if they can't afford it. This is obviously projecting where they're going to land at in with getting full premium and making all their sideways and upgrade trades. Yeah. What do you think on Adam Saad?
Definitely helps with Zach Williams out of the side, and I don't see that changing, at least. I think he might be up for the season or back for finals or something. It was a long-term injury off the top of my head.
It's a lengthy injury.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, even prior to that, he's had a pretty solid season. He's had 8 tons from, you know, his 13 matches, which is a very good return for a defender. I mean, if you're hitting more than 50% ton rate, and he has a decent floor, not an amazing floor, but you know, it's not like he puts out the 30s, 40s, 50s type scores.
I'd say his floor without Zach Williams is probably 80, 85.
Yeah. So, I just think he's quite good. 525K doesn't really break the bank, and he's a bit of a POD as well, which doesn't hurt, at this stage of the season, especially when they're not bad ones. I think out of the cheaper options, he's right up there with the best of the best.
Let's go cheaper.
All right.
Let's look really to the dregs of the Supercoach platform at the moment. What about Aaron Hall? 496K. I know your thoughts on this guy already. Now that he's had his return game, he's dropped a little bit more cash. His break even is still 127. He failed to ton up in his return game, which makes it since round 2 that he last toned up, obviously with that break as well. No, but there was 3 weeks after round 2.
Mm.
So it's been 4 consecutive matches of sub-tons. I'm curious on your thoughts on their run home and what Aaron Hall might be able to offer, especially compared to now saving another 20K on Saad and about 100K just about on Stewart.
Look, I think the problem I had with Hall watching him the last time he played was the first half he was great, you know. I was like, all right, yeah, it's Hall of old, you know. His son, I think it was at 50s at the halftime, taking the kickouts, looking really good. But then he started playing much further up the ground, and they took him away from the kicking area, and he just wasn't as involved. I mean, they basically look for him down back, and he just wasn't around there, which is a bit scary, because I'm like, what the heck type of role is this? And that's enough already from one game back, as coupled with the injury history, that scares me. I mean, the reason you get Hall is for that 115 upside. But if that doesn't look like it's there, I mean, I can't really then advocate for the pick.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think essentially if you're purchasing the risk of Aaron Hall, you want the risk of injury to be mitigated by the scoring potential. And this year, even before the injury, the 70 against Brisbane, the 97 against Sydney, he wasn't quite looking at going the 120s. The first two rounds, he looked like Aaron Hall, but it was against Hawthorn and West Coast. As soon as he came up against a little bit of tougher opposition, and then again against GWS, and like the injury game, he was on 71 and it was like halftime or something, 60 at halftime. He was looking good that game, obviously, before the injury, but I don't want to get carried away and say he's not going to turn up again or anything, but I don't think the injury risk is mitigated as much as we'd like it to be with the potential of a 120 average. I think he's now looking at 105 average for the rest of the season, and that's not quite enough, even at a discounted price, to not spend 20 extra thousand on someone who you think is probably safer.
Yeah, I think he goes less
like
than that
Adam Saad
at the moment.
Less than 105.
Yeah, I think he's more of a 100 type at this stage. Just
I'm not going to score over 5 points, Pistol, but I'll back you. All right, let's go. All right, so now do you have a left field option? Those are the guys who have been catching eyes. Do you have someone to throw into the ring as a left field option that people might not be assessing properly?
Daniel Rich, 5'10".
Yeah, 5'10". Being a Rich owner, essentially, the 55 was the tag game. That's what's really driven his price down. Since then, he's done nothing wrong. Back-to-back 119s. He looks like the Daniel Rich that we bought, the Daniel Rich of old. His run home is very up and down. Obviously, he plays for Brisbane. They're going to have a tougher fixture coming top four last season. But I don't think I'd put it past Daniel Rich going 105 plus for the rest of the year.
Yeah, he could go about that.
So 5'10", I think at this point, I actually think Adam Saad's less risky than Daniel Rich.
Oh, wow. Okay. Why do you think that?
Yeah, because, I mean, well, Rich still actually has a little bit of injury risk himself, which those who started him assumed would be mitigated by the fact that he was a potential 115. He's not 115. I think we can say that quite comfortably at this stage of the season. In fact, this is his first consecutive tons for the entire season. He was very up and down. He has been a tag risk now, now that we've seen that. He versus GWS again in round 18. I'm just not as confident that he goes or matches Saad. And Saad just seems, without Zach Williams, like someone who can just consistently go 105.
Fair enough. I don't have anything to add to that.
Why have I got Mark Blitzarves written on my sheet?
I think the defensive / ruck cover might be handy for some people this week if they're potentially, you know, one away from full primo, a very team-specific pick, and looking at copping a ruck donut. You can kind of kill two birds with one stone with this. Blitzarves has been, phenomenal for most of the season. He's had 8 of the last 10 games as tons, which is pretty great given there's a low of 83 and the other game was a 93. He doesn't seem to score, you know, significantly worse without, Stanley, with Stanley, without Stanley. There's minor differences, really. I think it just affects his floor more so than his ceiling. I mean, he's such a good runner that Geelong just use him, you know, in whichever role they need on that day, but he's just a good AFL player. And with so many games at GMHBA Stadium left, I mean, I think there's 5 remaining, so more than half of the games there. He scored really well there so far this season with a 119, a 135, a 101, and a 116. So if you have more than half of your games there for the rest of the season, you're probably going to do all right. So, yeah, a bit of a team specific pick, but I think he goes all right, JB.
Okay, now I've got a question for you. One last question before we finish defense. What if you've got exactly $432,700 to spend?
Jeez, I don't even have my thing sorted by prices, so
it's Lockie Whitfield's price.
Oh god. Let me try and
back-to-back tons now, Pistol. I just want to... No. It was rhetorical. Let's discuss Whitfield. No, Zorko. I can see Zorko and Pendles right there. I don't want the discussion.
Did you say 435?
432 and 700. Okay.
Just out of reach of
I was
Stephen
very
May.
Specific. Yeah, no, I saw him.
Okay. Yeah, I guess we're talking about Whitfield. Here we go again.
Whitfield, back-to-back tons. I just want to know if you saw the game, if you saw anything different in Whitfield's game that might be... He's 432K. We're talking basement price. We're talking saving a lot of money here if people are getting very desperate. Is there any percentage chance that this guy is able to go 95-plus for the rest of the year?
Just destroyed me this season, Whitfield. Absolutely destroyed me. Look, the scores are good. He played well against Bulldogs for a 101. That's fine. I just really want to see what impact Hopper and Taranto have on this GWS side, where he gets, you know, moved to, if they drop Ware and he goes back and Taranto slots into the half forward. I don't know. I really want to see what happens. I don't think they're fully settled. Maybe he plays pure wing for the rest of the season. I don't know. I don't feel super comfortable jumping on him without some of those questions.
Pure wing's good.
I think we'll know in 2 weeks. But by then, he might be, you know, 480K.
Yeah. So you're not ruling out that he's a dead pick.
No, not
if you were really desperate, his break even's 36. Do you think he can go 95 for the rest of the season?
I mean, he could. I don't like it, though. He's got injury risk as well. So it's not like you're paying. I mean, it's mitigated by his lower price, but it's not like super, super low. And he's
for anyone who's shopping around here, I'm going to give this the stamp of approval.
Jeez.
I think if you're this desperate that you're paying this price for someone, the trade that you're making elsewhere is going to make up for it. And the other side of the coin is going to be worth getting a guy, because I don't know who's priced 430 and sub in the forward line, or it's not even that, because you'd have to spend up more in defense. But essentially, however the conundrum works, that you're having to get someone this price in defense, I'm backing in the forward to do better than what the defender alternate is going to do. And I'm backing Whitfield to just hold his own with a 95 for the rest of the year.
Alrighty.
I'm backing it.
Let's move on from that one.
Hey, look, sometimes you got to put your name to something, and you got to put your donuts on the line, and that's just what's happening.
Let's move on before you start talking about Houston again, please.
Oh, wait, Houston? Ah, damn, I've already clicked the midfield tab. All right, let's go into the midfield upgrades then.
Houston's a defensive first midfielder, so you get both.
Oh, my God, yeah. First of all, Dan Houston. Jack Steele is the guy who I wanted to first talk about. Obviously, at the moment, price below 600K following those back-to-back 70s, one of which was a shoulder injury, sending him out for about 3-4 weeks. It's been 5 weeks. Now he's coming back. He's got a very large break even. Even if he scores at 115, he drops about 35K this week, all the way down to about the 550K mark, which is very cheap. So my question to you is, would you rather Jack Steele this week, if you've got the money, say it's your last upgrade, you've got the money, you're going to go get Jack Steele, or would you rather actually just wait a week, see how he plays with the shoulder, assess again, cop the rookie score on field, and just get him next week, post the drop, and just assuring everything's okay?
Probably just make sure.
Is he a good trade in at all, even?
Yeah, I'd probably make sure his shoulders and pop back out, give it one more game, and see if he's tackling. If he's too scared to tackle, then you're going to have to look elsewhere. But if he's back to, I mean, he gets a lot of his points from tackles. So if he plays this game and he gets two tackles, I'm going to be like, well, maybe I don't want to get him. But if he plays and he gets 10 tackles, and I'm like, all right, well, giddy up. We're going to get this absolute bargain. And not just that, you get a 2 week window to pick him because he had two back to back 70 scores. So his price won't even rise, from a big score anyway. So he's going to be at 550 for 2 weeks in a row. So that's good. And this falls back into the Stewart conversation where people might want a sideways trade and an M8. I think it's within the realm of possibility that he's 20 points per game better than someone like Zach Merritt at this point in time, unfortunately. And I know some other people...
He's not 20 points per game better. He might be 10.
Maybe. Absolutely. Maybe 10. It could be 15. It just depends on how...
It could be 15.
I mean, Jack Steele, last season after the bye, you know, went like 130. So I know it's not... Yeah.
Off the injury.
It just depends
on the
injury.
It's a bit risky, but
right?
I get it, absolutely.
Yeah, the upside is there. in that he might be 20 points per game better than Petrarca if Petrarca suddenly falls off a cliff. You know, Darcy Parrish, but I meant Zach Merritt. These guys could potentially be just a lot worse than Steele, and there could be a lot of points to gain, as well as JB, a captaincy option. So that's something that you need to take into account as well, because typically Steele's been really, really consistent. And for someone like myself, who, thank you, Took Miller, another 100 flat captaincy scores, where I literally have picked like four good captains in the entire season, and everyone else has been a flop. It's going to be very important for me to be able to, you know, probably do like a Neil into a steal and vice versa situation moving forward. So yeah, definitely looking at that as one of my last, so him and Stewart as my last sideways moves. Fortunately, I was full premium last week, so got there quickly, but now it's just about optimizing, and then I'll sit tight with the rest of the trades for after that.
Sam Walsh, another guy, break even 164, priced the same as Steele this week. Worst case scenario, Steele doesn't work out. Sam Walsh is your backup option. He's also going to be pretty cheap next week and a pretty good budget option. I wouldn't be trading in either of these guys. I think if you are waiting on a sideways trade or even waiting on full premium like I am, I'm more than happy to watch these guys battle it out for just one more week just to make sure I'm getting what I'm paying for the week after.
Yeah, it's look, no one in the game except for McRae, Neil, and Oliver, and probably Mills and Laird actually this season, have the scoring potential of Steele. So it's worth getting a look at and waiting for that, I think.
It just depends on... it depends on the shoulder, but Sam Walsh could go identical, if not better than Steele, if Steele's shoulder isn't functioning correctly. So watching them both for another week, I think, is a great opportunity. They both have high break-evens. They're both going to be cheaper next week. I just think this isn't the week to do the upgrade if you're considering it.
It's funny because any option you... I mean, just take it as a blanket rule that any option we say for now, the answer is wait 1 week for Steele.
Yeah, genuinely. The only other guys I have here to talk about, Ben Keys is really cheap at 539K. Just got his first sub 90 of the season, which is very upsetting. Owned by 8.6% of teams, but still just a very consistent Supercoach player. Hasn't had the best return in the last 5 weeks with a 5-round average of 100. Despite only 2 sub tons for the season, his 3-round average is 99. So that obviously goes to show he's getting the lower tons rather than the big tons that he started the season with. And then Zach Merritt, 529K, obviously back-to-back 90 scores that a lot of people now know about. He's owned by 7.4% of the competition. Also facing a decent break-even, so another one to assess for another week. But there are cheaper options around if you do need to budget in the midfield this week. But essentially, as you said, wait one more week and get Jack Steele.
That's it. That's basically the blanket advice. If you want to go even cheaper, like we're talking cheap, did you have any names?
No, I don't. None, actually. Travis Boak looks okay just because of the colours he wears, but no, essentially, I'm just relying on you to pull a name out of your hat here. I assume you've got someone.
Well, I mean, if you had exactly, you know, 507,900, you might be looking at Caleb Sarong. He's been really good in the last 6 weeks. Had scores of 117, 111, 107, 75, 119, 127. So he's had 5 of the last 6 games as quite big tons, which is nice to see. I mean, it feels like weird timing with 5 back, and you're like, you know, what might happen there, but he's been playing at least last week against Hawthorn as more of the like offensive midfielder, and Brody was playing more of on the defensive side. So I don't know if that's a trend that's going to continue, but at that price, you pay kind of what you get, but you get a little bit of potential upside as well. So if you need someone that dirt cheap, that's probably where I'm looking in that basket.
Into the ruck now. We're going to move on to the obvious Jared Witts, coming off his first low score of the entire season, 68.
You're welcome.
The 1 week people needed him to bounce in and just do well for them, obviously following a Max Gorn injury. Owned now by 43.1% of the competition. A super reverse POD if you are still fading Jared Witts. His break-even is 163. That's going to be 160 again next week. He's going to drop to about 540K, and that's with a couple more tons in the next 2 weeks. So obviously someone that if you're looking at this week, you're likely doing so to avoid a donut. 591K on its own, without actually considering the break-even, I think is still pretty cheap for what he's producing. The 68, for me, is potentially the biggest non-factor ever. he's still just an incredible pick. He's still going to go 110, 115 plus for the rest of the year. I wouldn't factor in the 68. If you were keen on Jared Witts before this week, there's no reason to not be keen this week.
I think there was a stat, forgive me, I can't remember where I've read it. It was like his average...
Probably on my socials, but...
127 since like round four or something. Yep. So he's been big. And the thing is, we spoke about it a couple of weeks ago, but his ruck run after that Rob game is just phenomenal. I mean, moving forward, we've got Port Adelaide, who basically don't have a ruck at the moment. We have Collingwood, who, you know, we're using Cameron. Richmond, and then Essendon, Brisbane, West Coast, Hawthorn, Geelong, Melbourne.
Nick Nat will be back for the West Coast one, but yeah.
I mean, yeah, sure. That's actually a good point. But it's almost...
Why? Why did you sound surprised by that?
Oh, just because, like, there's no reason for West Coast to bring back Nick Nat.
I mean, he's back in the next 2 weeks.
I mean, they'll play him because they need to. But there's no, like, real... What are they doing? I don't know.
They're just playing their superstar when he's fit.
Yes. I just think that ruck run is almost perfect. It's close to it. So when you've got a guy that's already been averaging 120 plus for majority of the season and you can bring him in this week, just do it. Like, don't overthink it. So it'd be massive overthink to pass on Witts if you can afford it this week.
Sean Darcy is the next one to discuss. Has lost 84K since round one. Break-even of 179 this week. He's going to lose more money and have a decent break-even the week after still. Unless he goes massive.
I reckon he's half a chance against Carlton.
I think he's every chance. Last year against Carlton, I recall he did ridiculous things to De Koning. Got up near about 180 plus, I believe. And this year against Carlton... I think he's going to do potentially something similar. I think he's personally a good option. The fact that he's the last ruck standing is extremely ominous.
It's hilarious.
He and Witts are, sorry, the last two rucks standing, one off of an ACL and one off of,
injured
the guy who misses every second game. But it's great. I mean, it's good for them. They're the durable athletes this year for some reason. I think Darcy...
It summarizes the season, doesn't it?
It really does. It puts it into context for sure. I think Darcy is a perfectly fine trading option this week. He's cheap. He's only 33K cheaper than Witts.
Yeah.
But if you've already got Witts and now you're sort of trying to plug a different hole, like you had Gorn and Witts combo, there really aren't that many options. And I think Darcy's just a really happy medium of, you know what you're going to get from this guy. He's going to go at the bare minimum 100 plus. He's going to have a super high ceiling. He's VC-able. I just think, although he's had back-to-back color-lowering games, I think for the rest of the season, he's good to go.
He has Port Adelaide after the Carlton game as well. So some big scores on the cards. I mean, when you've got someone, Darcy's ceiling is almost unmatched. So I think he's a totally good pick for the rest of the season. I mean, I wouldn't do that and go down the three trades, that's for sure. I think that's asking for trouble. But to be honest, though, like if you have 33 more K, I'd get Witts if I'm choosing between those two.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Are there any other ruckmen you want to discuss before we move on?
I think
now, obviously, we're discussing the forward rucks in the next discussion.
Yeah, I think Riley O'Brien probably needs to be just mentioned. He is a pretty good scorer, just, you know, his groundwork. But the problem I have is that they've been ruled out of finals, Adelaide, and once that happens, you never really know what they're going to do with their team lineup. They've already dropped him once this season.
Yep.
I think, you know, you've got to look towards the future. Brian's quite old now. I think he's like 34 or something like that off the top of my head.
What?
Could be completely wrong. But he has a very, very capable backup.
He's 26.
Riley O'Brien's 26 years old.
Yes.
Jesus Christ. Are you sure?
He's younger than me, mate.
Oh, my God. I have absolutely learned something in this podcast. I thought he's been around forever.
Correction. He's older than me. That was a lie. He's older than me.
You're right.
He's on the borderline, though.
He's only played since 2015. Jesus.
Yeah, dude. What? We got him as a rookie like 2 years ago.
I have no idea who I'm thinking of currently at this point in time. I'm clearly under the weather.
Goldstein, that guy's old as shit.
I'm clearly under the weather at the moment. Yes, it is affecting my performance on the podcast.
No, what you're saying is right, and I will come at it from a South Australian perspective. I said this before the season even started, that Riley O'Brien at some point would get dropped for Strawn. Strawn, extremely highly rated internally, has been playing well in the Sandful. If he keeps the pressure on Riley O'Brien, it's only going to take 1 week, and Strawn might only come in for 1 week, but the fact of the matter is, Strawn's going to come in for 1 week, you're going to have a donut that week, then Riley O'Brien's probably going to replace him straight away, but they're just slowly getting experience into this lad, because he's their future. I think Riley O'Brien might even be looking for a new club before long, so that sort of goes to say how much they rate Strawn and what he brings. And it's just something to monitor. I wouldn't be trading into that situation if I could avoid it. So
now it's got another 8 years at the club since he's going to play till 34.
Yeah, I just like age wise, he has time at the club. Talent wise, I think they rate Strawn higher, maybe even already. It's just that Riley O'Brien's got that mantle. It's a complicated situation, but it's sort of what Port have been worried about with Sam Hayes as well. But he's just sort of come up and shown that he's not quite the level at AFL level. So interesting situation at the very least, but not one that I'd be willingly trading into.
My mind is blown.
Let's go through the forwards lastly.
I'm still...
Your mind and your nose are blown.
Yeah, my nose is blown. That's true. Into the forwards, did you say?
Forwards, yeah.
This is interesting. There's a lot of picks. I think I'd like to start with...
Can I just throw names at you, like, and you just give me? We can commit as much time as you want to each name, but I just want to throw names at you. I've got a bunch here.
Yeah, all right, we can do that. Go for it.
All right, Canelio, with the stipulation that there are two GWS midfielders returning soon.
I mean, it's so frustrating. It's honestly like it's been a story the whole season of like these. The GWS team and coming in and coming out and being a Whitfield owner and thinking the same things. I mean, he's just had almost his best CBA split for the season last game. And then straight away there's Hopper, who's 2 weeks away, and also
Taranto,
that's, you know, a week or maybe 2 weeks away. I think, you know, Mark McVay's already said that they would like to play the people in their best positions and stuff like that. And I think that's a two-way street, right? Because Hopper can't play anywhere else. So if they're thinking, oh, play our players in the best positions, midfielders are midfielders. I mean, Hopper is a midfielder then. So what happens to the split? I don't know.
I think Taranto's best position is midfield as well. But I think both Taranto and Canelio are capable enough forward. The thing with Canelio is he hasn't obviously been playing exclusively midfield. Not just that, he's been kicking a high amount of goals as well per game. If I'm going to bet on anything, I'm going to bet on the fact that A, Hopper and Taranto affect him enough, and B, he doesn't continue kicking 1 to 2 plus goals per game. So if I were to predict anyone to sort of just, look, he might still average 100 flat with those numbers, even with all those factors. But if I'm tipping for someone to come back down to earth in the next few weeks, it's Canelio.
Yeah, it really does feel like a don't buy, don't sell at that price.
Yep.
I mean, look, honestly, last week, sub 500K, I'd feel a lot better about it. But now when he's in the same price range, pretty much as like Libba, where we've got more, I guess, surety.
Oh, well, that's my next name.
All right, well, then I'll just go straight into it. But Libba, I feel more secure in his role, particularly with Smith outside. I mean, Libba's been underratedly good since round 4, where he's only had 3 sub-tons since round 4, and they've been an 83, an 87, and a 92. Like, he was, I think, Last week he had a five round average of 110, and now he's just got it 102. I forgot the Supercoach site still says a five round average. He is 109.4 and a three round average of 109. He is a player that will go between 105 and 110 for the rest of the season. I feel pretty good about that. I don't really know if that's the same from now on with Cornelio. Obviously, we can't, you know, go back in time and get his 174, but I feel pretty good about Libba for the remainder of the season. And he's only in 3.4% of teams as well. So, again, he pushes that POD mantle. And I think, yeah, he's probably my go-to guy at, I'd say, that price. But that price is pretty much the top-tier expensive midfielder.
Seventh most expensive forward. Someone who's...
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A little bit on the cheaper side, Isaac Heaney being discussed a lot. I'm going to put his stipulation at that actually needs 2 goals per game plus to be able to score well. I think his average without scoring 2+ goals is low 80s. So he needs it. Having been an owner of him for a few weeks there, exclusively the bad weeks, his role, especially in close games and late, he gets the Mills treatment a lot. He goes to a wing to push back into defense, or he goes to a wing to try and cause an extra up forward. But either way, he doesn't score well in that role. He scores well exclusively leading out of the forward line and getting the occasional CBA to sort of spruce the tackles up a little bit. That's his role. And I'm not confident he gets that on a game-by-game, quarter-by-quarter basis. So with all that said, what are your thoughts on trading in Isaac Heaney this week?
I think it's unfortunate for the owners that got burned, and I know there was a lot of them, but when you take his numbers purely from a numbers perspective, they're really not that bad. I mean, in the last five rounds, he's only had one score below 92, and that was a 53. You know, 92, 94, 53, 96, 124 sounds pretty good for somebody that's only 453K as a forward and has multiple years history of going 90 plus. Totally agree in that, you know, that midfield role is, you know, a dead dream and he's a forward, but that's not bad timing when their draw for the rest of the season is quite good. I mean, they've got 5 games at the SCG. Again, that hasn't been a good thing for Heaney in the past, but it's the opponents that is, I guess, the important factor here for the rest of the season. Saints, Essendon, Bulldogs, Freo, Adelaide, GWS, North Melbourne, Collingwood, and Saints again. There's a lot of good matchups for Heaney, and you're paying now what I think is a much better value rather than paying, you know, like 540 with Heaney or whatever he peaked at. I mean, 450K is much more palatable if he does go just, you know, 90 to 95. So I'm all for the Heaney pick, but again, you got to just be careful with these players who are somewhat injury prone and bringing them in as your last couple. Like, are you really going to get like Darcy and Heaney this week for Bruce and Butters? Like, probably not.
No, I did that about 6 weeks ago. Thanks.
That's true. you did those tracks. Oh, that's funny.
Close to it. All right, Jeremy Cameron is the next name on my list here. And can I just say, before everyone laughs and turns the podcast off, I've owned this guy in a keeper league all season. Not someone who I kept last year, but someone who I drafted. He's actually been really good, and there's been a lot of his scores. I'm just looking through. The 54 against Essendon in round one, he was on 54, like I'd say 5 minutes into the second quarter before he had that injury to the ribs and needed to go into the ambulance, but then somehow played the week after. He's had a couple of games like that where he's just sort of copped some sort of an injury early, which has stopped him from going bananas. So I know that it looks like he's got a really low floor, but I don't think the floor is... I think the floor is probably 70 in a normal... all things considered match. I think his floor is 70, and he's got a ridiculously high ceiling. He just put up 153 against the Western Bulldogs. So, look, at 513K, he's about 50K overpriced for what I'd like to pay for a Jeremy Cameron punt, but I don't think he's the worst selection in the game.
Yeah, with that draw we've mentioned for Geelong with five games at home in the run home against some easy sides as well. I mean, West Coast... in round 23, it's, you know, very, very tasty. And North Melbourne in round 16 is extremely tasty. There's every chance that he averages 100 plus. You know, I mean, he'll have some stinkers, but he'll counteract that with a big 150 score as well. So, yeah, at that price, it's probably not good value, but it's probably fair value for what you can get on that run home.
Now, the names are getting more and more speculative as I go here. Let's talk about Harry Himmelberg before we get carried away. And I want to talk about him from a perspective of someone who doesn't own him, watched him on the weekend, really appreciated his scoring capabilities in defense, really didn't appreciate his actual defensive capabilities in the game. I thought he got caught a lot of times, caught out losing his defensive matchup. And then also noticing, and I know this is injury affected as well due to Priest getting injured, but maybe it's not entirely that. He played all right when he went into a ruck forward role in the last quarter. Any of that, does any of that, as someone who's a non-owner looking to potentially pay 500K for him, does any of that tell you that I absolutely should not pay that money?
I wouldn't. I own him. I brought him in last week. I don't think I would bring him in now.
Yes, I agree.
I think 503 is not cheap enough for that risk. I mean, he went up 67K last week. It was amazing watching how quickly he could score those 80 points. Like, he was scoring with ease when he was playing in the back line. And then he moved, once he moved and only scored like 15 points for the rest of the game in over a quarter, was pretty worrying. Honestly, they have a lot of black forwards and key forwards and rucks and whatever they got going on in that GWS line. I feel pretty confident that he'll play back, but it's going to be that Sicily type thing where they might throw him forward if they're desperate to kick a goal near the end of the game. And
well, I think coaches are underrating the fact that he was their leading goal kicker when the move happened. It's like Sicily was struggling as a forward and then got reinvented as a defender and still thrown forward occasionally just to take a mark. Harry Himmelberg is absolutely in danger of the same thing. And I'm not trying to concern people who have him because I think he's a really good commodity to own, but I don't think he's a good commodity to purchase. Obviously, if you're an owner now, you got him for something around 430K, which I think is great, very good value, playing the game correctly. Now, if you're buying him, I think you're just chasing those points and buying into a lot of risk mitigated by not much upside in terms of the price and the consistency that we expect for someone who could easily get thrown around.
Yeah, I like, you know, obviously we're all going to, the owners like myself, are fingers crossed over the next couple games. So
and
just
optimistic,
plays,
absolutely.
I mean, plays Collingwood this week, so I'll obviously be keeping a close eye on it. I'd like to think that he plays as a defender the whole game. If he does that, he's going to score really well against Collingwood because our forward 50 entry is so poor. There is upside there, I think, if he gets the right role. But, you know, any sort of switching around, playing forward, it's just a dead pick. And then I'll look to, I guess, trade him out to steal next week.
Before I get into the ruck forwards, I want to just quickly discuss a few more names. These are going to be real rapid fire. Toby Green. he's priced at 436K. Yeah.
He's cheap, I'll give you that. I think I prefer Heaney for like 14K more. Yep. I mean, Toby Green's like floor is really low. You can't buy the points.
Yeah, no,
you
I
just
agree.
Miss the
I
seven agree. Goals.
I only want short answers here, Pistol. Sorry. I only want short
Go
answers.
For it.
Jack Graham.
So Graham, I looked into because he had a 5-round average above 100, but his role, his CBAs haven't shifted at all, like since round 3 or something like that. So no real difference in role. He's just playing much better footy, which is not something I appreciate when like Dusty is missing. So he didn't get more midfield time. I would have liked to have seen kind of a spike or something, because it just means that he's, I guess, higher up the pecking order. But he's in a position where he's not going to get more midfield time for the rest of the season. So, yeah, I'd stay away there. I think it's not a trap, but I don't think it's a good value pick.
Someone who you've spoken about their upcoming run in a very positive light before, Taylor Walker.
Taylor Walker. I thought we were going to go with Tom Hawkins.
Not yet.
Yeah, Tex. It's an interesting one. The run is not as good now because we've already missed the West Coast game where we were speaking about the run forward. Look, you get those inconsistencies with these big key forwards, but I'd put him in the same basket as Jeremy Cameron. North Melbourne this week, you'd think he'd kick a bag. Melbourne's not a good matchup. And then against, you know, they've got North Melbourne again and West Coast again towards the end of the season. I think he's probably slightly worse than Jeremy Cameron, and that's only because Jeremy Cameron plays for a much more dominant side and they're better at home than Tex, but I can't really knock it too much given...
No, I agree.
Yeah,
I agree. I think Jeremy Cameron's the pick out of those two, depending on what the 20-odd K does for you, I guess, but yeah, likely Jeremy Cameron's the better pick. I'm going to move on. Liam Baker.
Yeah, Baker's also playing really well. That back roll is good for Richmond players. The problem I have is Baker is good everywhere. Like, they could play him, if they wanted to, they could play him half forward and he would be really good. And if he played the half back, he'd be really good as an AFL footballer. He's just
ruck.
Good. Yeah, probably not ruck. Although maybe. They haven't played in there yet. We'll have to wait and see.
TBD.
It's that versatility that it makes it too scary to pick him, because you think that they're going to settle him in the halfback line, but you don't really know for sure. And that 464K is not a bargain anymore. If we're talking 3-4 weeks ago when he was 380K, I'd have a look, but we're not. So
I think he's safe in that position, and I think he's going to average 90 flat. I just don't think that's good enough, especially with the names that I see around him.
Yeah,
A good player, but
he's more expensive.
I just don't think he's. Yeah, and he's not better pick than Heaney. Jade Gresham.
So Gresham's good, but he's 490K and he's averaged 95 this season, and I don't see much reason, given Steele is about to return, that he's going to average, you know, that much more than 95 for the remainder of the season. So it's probably a fair price, and I do think he just goes 95 for Essendon. You could totally buy him. I mean, they've got 6 games at Marvel out of their last 9. So he's scored pretty well there this season, actually. Almost exclusively all of his tons, except one, have been... That's actually pretty funny. Yeah, have been at Marvel. So the 109...
I'd still prefer Heaney. Another case where I'd just prefer Heaney.
I think there's an argument for Gresham because his scoring is so good at Marvel.
But Gresham and 40K?
I mean, he's got a low of 99 at Marvel this season. So
Gresham and 40K?
I think it's probably about even there.
Okay. Good run, Mitch Duncan.
Good run, Mitch Duncan. I mean, that's a cheap pick. It's in the same price range as Heaney, so I'd feel much more comfortable.
451
with Heaney. He's actually, ironically, scored terribly at home this season. A 77 and 82 and a 47 and a 67.
Is he... I need to see this. Can someone figure this out and tweet at me? Is he the best first half player and worst second half player in the competition?
Might be. He always starts well, like, quarter one.
Comparatively, not like he would obviously score more points than people who average 20 in the second half, but comparatively to his first half, he must be the worst first half, second half split player.
Second worst.
In the league. Why? Who's the worst?
It's got to be Dylan Moore.
I can't say I've paid attention to his scoring that much.
He scored like, I think, I can't remember what the stat was, but it was a ridiculous amount of his goals had come in the first half, and he'd basically not scored in the second half. He'd have so many.
Right, yeah, he's a very good first quarter player. I know that.
He had
much.
Like 50 plus, like super coach quarter, like in the first half. He'd be on like 70 or 80 at halftime, and then just score like 95.
interested to know. If anyone can follow that up. I don't even know if we get that many listeners at this time of year to have someone
to do the
pack up and follow that up.
Yeah.
One last name before we get into the ruck forward discussion. Adam Treloar, owned by 18% of people. And
another Bulldog.
Yeah, another Bulldog priced at 505K.
He's fine. I put him in the same. I'd rather Gresham at the same price. I mean, his scoring's not that good. Treloar is averaging 97 for the season. Has a squad.
Risk mitigation, people. He does not tick the risk really. Mitigation box.
82 and 88.
He's still very injury prone.
Yeah, look. I'd pay Gresham at 25k less if I had to. It's like the same type of pick, so I'd probably look there. JB, can I throw at you two cheap ones that you can just kind of tick off? Actually, just one. It's Tom Hawkins. He has a good run coming up.
No, I don't. No.
Tom Hawkins has a good run coming up.
I'm sure he does because of the GMHBA games. Now, he just hasn't quite been that guy this year. He's only had the 5 tons to this point. He's been consistently decent, but just not that good. He's got a 33 against Sydney, a 64 against Fremantle. Look, I'm not even sure the GMHBA is that big of a factor for him. He hasn't tonned at GMHBA since round 4. That's his only ton there, so... I think Jeremy Cameron's the guy now. Hawkins can afford to stay at home, kick his 3 or 4, but doesn't need to be involved up the ground as much as what Jeremy Cameron does.
What about Mason Cox?
I told you he had to get a disposal last week for you to be able to mention him in the podcast.
I fell for it so badly. So badly.
You've broken the rule, though. You lost the bet, and you've already mentioned him.
I'm sorry. We'll have to wait for him this week to get a couple of touches.
Apology not accepted. three ruck forwards to discuss before we move on completely. Firstly, let's talk about, I nearly called him God Toldstein, but Todd Goldstein, that's a funny way to rename him. He essentially since round 7 has looked incredible. 125, 142, 103, 88, 123, 98, 104. Games with and without Sherry in that mix as well. The issue with Goldstein is he's 532K. The solution with Goldstein is he could offer potential ruck cover, especially this week where it might be needed, and essentially has good scoring history. It's just, is it going to continue? What are your thoughts on him?
So it's been an interesting case for Goldstein. As you said, with Sherry in and out of the side, it's made a difference. But I think interestingly, since he's come back into the side, Todd Goldstein has remained as the number one ruck. So even playing alongside Cherry, there's just been a 65-35% CBA kind of split going on between them. There's no way in really knowing what North Melbourne are going to do. I mean, do they just, try and go for the number one pick again, or do they play their best side? I think they've just looked better with Goldstein in the ruck, so... You'd hope they'd continue that way. And Goldie's, as you said, he's got the scoring history. There's no reason that he can't maintain his scoring, his current scoring rate. Like, he could go 110 for the rest of the season. I would not be surprised. But at the same time, Goldstein could end up on the wing, like when I traded him last season, and then be terrible. So it's that high-risk, high-reward pick. I don't personally think it's too bad, but the price isn't super kind either. Like 535K, we're so close to Libba territory. Like for 15K more, I think I'd just rather the safety of Libba, although it doesn't.
What
doesn't
if it prevents a donut this week, though? Because that gives a significant trade off, essentially. You're getting 100 points in the bank this week.
Yeah, so I guess I'll just have a mini rant because it's going to impact all of the ruck forward discussions.
Yes, please.
As you said, Goldstein this week is likely, I mean, people that are copying a donut probably have a combination of Proust and English and I guess like Tickle or something, so they're looking at that donut. Goldstein is 100 points guaranteed. I gotcha. I'm in that situation. However, optimizing your team with another trade such as Stewart or Steele, which we spoke about earlier in the podcast, probably nets more than 100 points. I mean, we were talking earlier back at the beginning of the podcast about Stewart likely earning you 150 points for your team. And Jack Steele over my M8 is almost certain to gain more than 100 points before the end of the season. And if I'm on a limited trade situation and the game's about, you know, overall points, I'm thinking I'd rather use my trades to optimize and cop the donut for 1 week, knowing that I've, you know, got a ruck. I'd say knowing, but you don't know anything with GWS. And you've got kind of a bailout as a Pruce owner, such as myself, in that if Pruce isn't named next week, well, Darcy Cameron's likely to fall 40K, and you can Darcy Cameron, I meant Sean Darcy, and then you're able to make that swap much more cheaply as well. So I think, to me, that feels like a standout play. I mean, you might disagree, JB. I'm not really sure what your stance is, but yeah, it's copying the donut, I don't think is that bad if you're in a situation where the optimizing your team might net more points for the rest of the season. But again, very team dependent, because you might own Stewart and your M8 might be Petrarca, and then you won't be getting, you know, 100 points benefit from bringing in Jack Steele, for example, in which case then Todd Goldstein is the pick for you. So yeah, very team dependent on that one.
I think it's interesting. It's actually difficult to comment on. Goldstein, Darcy Cameron, who you've mentioned, and we'll talk about Luke Jackson.
I mentioned Darcy Cameron by accident.
No, I think it's a fair name to bring up. But I think those two, I just wish there were slightly better options. I wish there was a slightly better name that tickled me where I could go, all right, this guy's guaranteed 100. I can make that trade knowing that I've secured 100 points this week. He's going to hold off whoever my trade out was anyway, who's missing this week. Cover the donut, cover future donuts potentially as well, and be happy with it. I'm not confident with either Goldstein or I'm definitely not confident with Darcy Cameron. Obviously, Grundy's coming back in about a month, give or take a week, and Darcy Cameron just goes from the guy who he is now and has been to the guy who averaged 50 in the early parts of the season. So as unfortunate as that tale is, the Darcy Cameron run is coming to an end eventually. And you just can't trade into that. Todd Goldstein, I kind of trust him. Do I trust him enough to use a trade on and trust that he's going to continue to play throughout the entirety of the season and at a premium rate? That's really difficult. That's really difficult to commit to. People out there might, and if they do, then absolutely, I would suggest that this trade is beneficial. The thing that just gets me stuck, it's not even the fact that I could do a sideways somewhere else in my team and sort of make the points elsewhere, because think about it. You're locking in 100 points growth this week and potential growth going forward. They're just having the cover, right?
Yeah.
That's guaranteed. I mean, he's not guaranteed to score 100, but he's guaranteed to score you whatever the points are that you trust that he gets this week. The Steele versus Merritt conundrum, the Stewart versus Short conundrum, they have more variables. They have to last 9 weeks to get to that endpoint.
That's right.
There's 9 different data points that could have, you know, injuries or just bumps or knocks or tags or... all of a sudden, Merritt went 150 this week, and now Steele's only going to make 70 points on him, sort of thing. There are so many variables. Goldstein just has to perform this week and then survive the season as anyone else would have to survive the season. So I understand the risk, and I understand the trade prospect. And look, I've got complete clarity over the situation, is what I'm trying to say, but I still don't have advice on what people should do as just a blanket advice, which we give here. We sort of cut through the BS and try to give good blanket advice that people can follow. I don't really have the answers for this scenario, because it's more so person dependent. It's dependent on you, the listener, and what you think Todd Goldstein is capable of, what you think Jack Steele is capable of, what you think a trade is worth, how many trades you have, how much money you have. There's so many impactful ways that this impacts you. I think the important thing to end off on is to say you don't need to desperately cover the donut. It's not the end of the world. You're going to lose on people who are able to cover this donut with a Judson Clark or a Roses or someone, you're losing 60 points, maybe 50, yep. maybe even 40. Like there's a scenario where their replacement doesn't even score enough to impact you this week. So it's not something that I would really stress over, but at the same time, you got to understand your process, and a lot of people already have a thought process on this, and they're sort of wanting us to tip them over the edge. I would just back yourself in is my best advice, I guess. I don't know if that's really lame, Pistol, but it's really like it's difficult to just say, "Hey guys, just go and do this," because I'm honestly looking at the scenario for my own team, and I said off the top that I was getting a donut. I don't know anymore. I'm considering Goldstein. I don't know. So I've got a lot to think about as well. I need to get some clarity on the matter. But it's a very difficult scenario. You're choosing between a donut and trading in someone who you don't trust.
For what it's worth.
And either way, yeah. it's not fun.
For what it's worth, I think Todd Goldstein's the best of the forward ruck options. It's just
he is. We haven't spoken about Luke Jackson yet. Can we just quickly say why we hate him? Because we both hate him.
Well, let me just quickly touch on that.
Okay,
Goldstein's still 530k, right? So depending on if it's Proust or if it's English, that will make a difference in which player you're looking to trade in. But you know, Witz is only 60k more, so I would be trying to make that effort to bring in Witz then if you could afford him. And if you can't, Sean Darcy is only, you know, 20k more, and Darcy against Carlton is a really good matchup, I think.
Pistol, I have Darcy and can't afford
Yeah, kids. So that's basically when we say that's team dependent. Only then I would be looking at these ruck forward options, and that yep. means that then Goldstein falls as like the next choice. And when you get to the Goldstein stage, I think that's when you really consider team dependent on if I should cop the donut or if I should not cop the donut.
Yep.
I it's agree. Not a good matchup against Rob either. For Goldstein.
No, it's not, as we just saw with Jared yeah. Witz. I think Goldstein's a little bit more mobile and can get yeah. points in more alternate ways than what Jared Witz does.
Agreed.
But essentially, it's still not a fun matchup. He's not guaranteed to go 100 plus this week.
Yeah.
So another thing to consider. I think you've turned me, just with those last couple of sentences, back to copying
I'm
the donut.
I'm not trying either original. Way. It's up
no,
to
no,
you.
I know you're not, which is perfect. So just lastly, Luke Jackson, before we sort of move into our captaincy discussion, why do we hate him, Pistol?
You just don't put words in my mouth. As a
human being, as a humanitarian, as someone who plays football, as just from a personality standpoint, we don't like anything about him, and I'd like you to explain exactly
Jesus,
why.
Jesus, that was quite targeted and harsh. I'm sure it's
okay,
a fine
no.
bloke.
Can I backpedal? We actually love Luke Jackson, but I don't think he's a good selection this week.
Yeah, look, Luke Jackson, we all know, is like going to have an amazing career, is amazing potential. He looks like he's going to be an absolutely wonderful footballer. But the fact of the matter is Gawn's listed as 2 to 4 weeks on the injury list. If that is 2 weeks, you buy Luke Jackson, who... what's his best case? He plays Rob in round 16. I think he probably gets towed up anyway. Maybe 110 in both weeks is like best case scenario for Luke Jackson.
That would be incredible. That would be...
I said best case scenario.
Beyond my expectations. Yeah. No, I'm agreeing. Yeah, that is absolutely best case scenario.
And then what, Gawn comes back and you get a guy who has, to this point in the season, only averaged 82. Is he your F6 then? Is he at your R2? I mean, if you're making this move and he's going to sit at your R2, like, no, like, definitely not. If he's going to be sitting as your F7, I can see there being merit in it, because then it's just cover for the season. You probably won't really need him. But if he's your F6, no. Like, you're gaining this week, best case scenario, 110. I think it's likely it's what, 90, 95 points, which is great value for money. But then... you're losing points on whoever you just probably traded out. I mean, if you're coming from a Proust, you're almost definitely losing points every round after that for the rest of the season.
You're losing points from next week, yeah.
I mean, I would be surprised if Proust didn't outscore Jackson by round 23 by 80 points. I'd be quite surprised.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. Also, his break-even's 89. I suppose I would get this if it was more of a money grab with the points upside as well, but it's not. He's probably
drop.
maintaining at best this week. He might drop this week. I don't understand people's projection, though. Going into the ruck doesn't guarantee you points. He's undersized. I'm sure he's going to score better than what he has been. But like 90, 95, like they've got Oscar Mack.
He's a big lad.
They've got Riley O'Brien. And he's got Reece Stanley.
Big lad.
Those are three ruck oppositions who I would not want my jumping jack, like athletic ruckman who's extremely undersized to be playing against to score points. Against Finlayson, against Poor, if he gets there,
that's
then
great.
Absolutely, I could see a good score. But then that's it. Gorn's back. If he even makes it that far, Gorn is now back, and he's averaging 80. And you got to deal with him for the rest of the season. And you're not trading him out, because if you're getting someone like Luke Jackson, you are not someone who has a surplus of trades. Otherwise, you're just using an extra trade and going up to either Goldstein or Witts or whichever ruckman it is that you don't have, Darcy. So just do that.
Yeah.
Do one of the other options. Don't get Luke Jackson.
I think particularly those that have Proust and are thinking Proust to Jackson for that 80 points. Honestly, I mean, Proust was averaging 110 before last week on the season.
And looked good as well before the injury this week.
If he's going to average 110 for every game for the rest of the season, I mean, he's going to outscore Luke Jackson anyway. You've wasted the trade. And you've not just wasted the trade, but there's that opportunity cost of trying to optimize your team, and you could be gaining more.
I thought you were going to say you've not just wasted a trade, but you've wasted our time. I thought you were going to say that.
No, the opportunity cost is there as well. So I don't really understand the Jackson pick outside of F7 cover. I think F7 cover is reasonable.
Oh, I think it becomes a good pick.
Yeah.
F7 R3 cover, I think it then becomes a good pick.
Yeah, so do I.
If you can do that.
Yeah.
And he's cheap enough to make that a good pick. Anyways, so that summarizes that. I just want to quickly run through the names and just see what your thoughts are on holding or trading. This is going to be super easy for you.
Because I have more.
Yes. Yeah. Tim English.
You've got to hold Tim English.
Max Gorn, if you still have him.
I think you've got to trade. I would be more surprised.
Yeah.
Like, he's a big dude. And coming back from him and a bad ankle injury, that feels like it's probably going to be close to the... I'd be surprised if it's two. I'm not out of the question. He recovered really quickly in his last major injury. But it's, you know, 4 weeks is, I think, the more likely of those two scenarios. So it's a trade for me.
Yep, agreed. Wait, just quickly on that. What if Jackson was that R3, F7... guy in your team, would you hold him for the extra couple of weeks? I don't even think he's worth it. He wasn't even scoring incredibly. Like, he had a couple of big scores, don't get me wrong, but I don't think he's worth holding for 4 weeks for. He's not 125 max score.
No, the thing is, Jackson might go like 130, 130, 50, 130, and then you're like, oh, that was worth it, but then it's like not that good. Like, that's good. That's good. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. That's like absolutely best case. But like, I just don't see these really, really massive scores from him. I think it's likely he just kind of does what those mid-tier athletic rucks. I mean, I feel bad calling him mid-tier. He's obviously a very talented player, but the ruck run is bad. Like, it's not a good 3-round ruck run. So
Okay. Braden Proust.
I feel like an idiot saying hold.
Apparently, fear just the 1 week suspension. His suspension risk might be higher than his injury risk,
so
and that's saying something.
I can't believe
it. I don't
it.
Understand. Not only has he got himself suspended, but he's knocked out and concussed our backup ruckman, the flog. Not a flog in real life, but just damn it, Bruce. The timing on that is absolutely incredible.
He's
brought himself out and taken our other ruck with him. It's unbelievable.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he was injured and they took longer and GWS lied. Like, how can you possibly trust GWS? But I'm willing to risk it.
We find out next week, though.
The problem is he's such a cheap price for his potential output that I'm willing to risk it for 1 week. And if they come back next week and they say, oh, it's going to be, you know, 2 weeks or whatever it is, I'm not going to cop two donuts. I'll just trade in Darcy then at a cheaper price. I think that's a play for me.
Good play. This one goes without saying, but Tekle, I suppose, he's just at a hold. Yeah. What can
Let's
you do?
Him.
Last one, Zach Butters.
I was wondering when we'd get around to Butters.
Yeah, I thought I'd save him for last.
I mean, I would love you to talk to us about Butters. I mean, I feel like you'd like to do that.
It doesn't require much. He's listed as 1 to 2 weeks. Port are very honest with their injury assessments. Last time he had this exact injury last season, it was 1 week. At the point of the injury, I said in the chat, it is likely 1 to 2 weeks because he's done this exact thing before. So he has a good speedy recovery time. He even came back from the syndesmosis nice and early. I would be surprised if this stretched out beyond... I'd honestly be surprised if it stretched out beyond the 1 week.
All right.
But say it just goes for the two, like he's listed, 1 to 2. That's still a hold. He's still a premium. He was scoring extremely well before the injury. And off the lowest CBA count he's had all season, back to that half-forward role that we started him for last year, not expecting the CBA rises. He's just a good scorer wherever he plays when he's not having stuff like this happen. I absolutely understand if people have extra trades and they take this opportunity to move the guy who keeps on battering, ramming himself into teammates and into injuries. But let's not get it twisted. He's still not someone who's entirely injury prone. He's very bad luck prone still. And I know people are going to keep on mocking me for just continually saying, oh, it's bad luck. He tackled someone who fell across his knee in the most awkward fashion. The week before, it was a head knock with his teammate. The Pau Pepper incident was again with his teammate. Like, these aren't incidents that you look at and go, oh my God, two knocks from teammates and someone falling across their knee. They're extremely injury prone. And I know it keeps happening, but I don't know which gypsy cursed him, but I still don't put him in the category of, oh, he's likely to miss games in the run home. So I think for me, he's personally a hold. But I understand if people just want to get off the roller coaster if they have a surplus of trades.
I think this one for me is a bit more team dependent. If you're going to cop a donut, I don't think Butters is he's expensive enough that I would be comfortable upgrading him. I think if you don't own a Libba and you're going to cop a donut, that would probably be a move I would make because that feels like, you know, 105 for the rest of the season and points every week. I'm not sure if I would like sideways trade to Heaney, because you're getting another equally injury-prone player and scoring is a bit erratic.
What about the Goldstein player?
Yeah, I don't think I might. I think that one, it goes back down to how many trades you got. If you have Stewart already, if you don't have Stewart, I mean, Stewart's a big priority, I think, for teams that don't have Stewart. I think Steele is a nice to have, but a very nice to have, a very, very nice to have. If you have the trades... I honestly wouldn't mind just because he's not like threatening to be a, you know, top 1 to 3 player in his line. Like, he is a fringe F6 anyway. So I just would try and keep the risk minimal to my trading. I wouldn't go like really speculative.
I'll do new starting Butters next season before we move on to captains.
It's almost zero.
Yeah, it's the same for me.
He's pushing that never again list. Not because he's like a bad player or anything,
he's just luck prone at this point.
I mean,
you just want to see him get a full season out before you trust him.
I mean, it's kind of like the Heaney thing where I just don't trust his body, yep. So I stay away and I'll trade him in with 8 rounds to go, but I wouldn't trade. I don't think I could start him.
Yeah, I think I'm in the same boat. With all this poor luck and up and down rollercoaster BS, he's still averaging over 90.
That's crazy.
Like, he's obviously got the talent. He was going to get 130 this week if he didn't get injured.
200. He was on 60 a quarter time.
Yeah, I mean, he was going mammoth. So, like, he's obviously got the talent. There's something there, but it just keeps happening, doesn't it? So, he's absolutely unlikely to start in my team next year. So, I'm keen to VC him round one. the captaincy options for this week, we've got a clash of the big boys. I don't know how Brisbane go in eating the Supercoach pie, but Melbourne versus Brisbane, there's obviously the Clayton Oliver factor here and the Lachie Neale factor coming in at once. And colliding like a star. There are a lot of good VC options. So let me just quickly flick some at you. Clayton Oliver versus Lachie Neale in the Thursday night game. You got the Bulldogs versus Hawthorn. So you got the mobile Tim English against the immobile Reeves. And then you've obviously got the Bontepelli and McRae factors and Dunkley, who's been scoring up and down. But
I've got a feeling that English is not going to score well this week.
You don't reckon?
It's not playing.
Oh, my God. Yeah, all right. Got you. Just by me. All right, fair play. You've got McRae still in that matchup, so he's still playing this week. Parrish versus West Coast is one if Parrish is named to play. And then we flick on a bit, and there's Carlton early Saturday. There's a few plays in that, and et cetera. So all the way to Laird versus North Melbourne, which seems like the safest captaincy option if you own him. So of those VCCs, is there a potential Clary / Neil into a McRae or into a Parrish?
Yeah.
Could you wait, hold your VC all the way to Darcy versus Carlton? Is that something to be doing if you've got Laird? What do you reckon? There's a lot of options this week.
I'm not scared of a Turner tag. I think I would be captaining Laird if I owned him. I just don't own him. I think Mills is a really good captaincy option against St Kilda at their CG. Even when they put him behind the ball, he still scores well. He's just a really good player.
Good player.
So they're probably the two. I don't own either of them, but they're the ones that I'd be looking at captaining if I did own. I think for people that don't own them, like myself, you're probably looking at what you said earlier, an Oliver or a Neil into McRae. It's going to be tough to choose between Oliver and Neil. You're hoping that the game is like tight the whole time and they get all the scaling points.
Can we just go one into the other and decide at halftime or something?
It's tough. I mean, as well, like I thought Cripps, like possession wise and everything, like he was really threatening. He just, you know, had a bad Supercoach game as well.
He had the best 79 I've ever seen in Supercoach. I thought he was so unlucky to not get a bigger score. Yeah. I was complaining about that all game long. So, but essentially, I think you're spot on. We're going one of those Thursday night guys into a Friday night. What do you reckon about Parrish if he does come back? Is he a better option than McRae?
I mean, I don't think so, but I'm only saying that if he played last week, I'd say yes. I'm not really sure how play, like even if he's past fit, is he like 100% fit or is he like 95% fit?
I think it's as simple as if you're an owner, and I've done this a lot this year, you just accept the fact that him playing is enough of a win and you don't need to double down on that.
Yeah, okay.
Him playing and him, even if he goes 180 and you're like, damn it, I consider captaining him. He played, he didn't get injured, and he's still like even a bit of a POD at this point. So you're just happy that he plays, and if he scores, great, that's a bonus. You're not upset that you didn't captain him because you're just happy that he's playing and you're not getting someone like Judson Clark off your bench.
What about who we spoke about a couple of times, Darcy as an option, maybe as a VC option?
Yep.
Yeah. I think, pretty much got the highest VC ceiling in the game there. If you want to try and spike,
if I had Laird and Darcy, I would do Darcy into Laird personally.
And what about Jared Witts against Port? They've got no ruckman at all.
There's something about Port and coming up against a ruckman who should dominate them, like Max Gawn should have a couple of years ago.
I mean, he did this season, right?
This season he did, but
isn't that the same ruckman?
We had Lysette. No, we had Lysette.
Oh, yeah, and he played with half an arm. That wasn't good.
Yeah. It wasn't good. There's just something about Port. They actually do their homework into ruckman.
But how do you stop? Like, Witts is so big, so they're going to try and shark as many taps as possible. But it just
means, I think they'll shark, and I think they'll give him trouble around the ground as well and just try and get him beat up between the contests, which they did to Gawn, which really got under Gawn's skin, and he gave away a couple of ruck frees that day as well. So, look, this might just be superstitious, but I don't think Port are the type to give up the obvious high score. If I went through every Port match this year, I reckon the highest score of the opposition player would be someone who you probably wouldn't predict in your first couple of guesses.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm leaning towards Witts just because if he gets 80 hitouts this week, how badly can he really score?
That's true.
I mean, but with that being said, I'm terrible at captains this season.
Negative one. He'll go negative 80 with those 80 hitouts.
It's
the shark behavior.
So I'm playing around between Oliver, McRae, and Witts, I think.
Yeah, so I think I'm just going to go Oliver into McRae. I think that just seems like the safest thing. It was probably the safest thing round one, and it's still one of the safest things right now. So both of them averaging over 120. If they both avoid a 120 score, then We'll just put that down to really bad luck. I think that's those are the guys I'm
backing. So I'd love a 120 captaincy score.
Yeah, I mean, I captained English this week.
Yeah, well, screw you.
My other captaincy option was Took, so I gained 10 points, but it was very nerve-wracking.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think, does that wrap us up, JB?
That does. You love going through the Twitters, but I'm not going to let you this time. You can catch us at JB_DRSC, Pistol_DRSC, Cheese over the Z at Cheese over the Z _DRSC, and then the main at Dr_SC. So please leave feedback. We do love hearing feedback, positive or negative. Negative mainly geared towards Cheezo because he's not here. Thanks everyone for listening. Good luck this week in your conundrums, because I'm sure you have plenty, as we do. And Donut for Donuts should be popular this week, so I need to do mine if I choose to go against God's sin as well. So look for that next week. Thanks everyone for listening, and have a good week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.